Hello, Haunters. This is part two of our trip into the past, reflecting on the changes in the attractions industry. If you've not listened to the previous episode, stop and go back. Okay, let's recap. In part one, our panelists mainly discuss the impact on your attractions operations. There's a new normal we're operating in, and it's something you must account for when you're planning this season. It's not just the social distancing, it's understanding how the entertainment landscape and guest expectations have changed. So today, let's take a look at what predictions our panelists made back then and see what held up. From the Haunted Attraction Network, I'm Philip, and this is part two of Flattening the Curve, Aftershocks for the Attractions Industry.
What do you think about the impact of global recession on this industry?
If you think back to the recession, what was it, 20 years ago? The industry definitely took a hit, and there was modifications made on the employment side of things and how they managed their budgets and what they spent money on. The industry itself is going to survive, and it'll be what it was 20 years ago, where it's going to take some two steps back, but hopefully take 10 or 11 steps forward as it grows again.
I agree with that. I think there are going to be some serious bumps along the road. And unfortunately, there will be some attractions and some companies that do have to close, or they're consolidated with some of the larger organizations. But there will be a recovery. I think it will be slow. I think you're going to see the regional destinations come back quicker than those international destinations. Right here in Orlando, I think is going to be a bit of a challenge, because there's going to be hesitancy for international travel, for the middle-class family that's been impacted financially to plan that 5 or 6 day trip to Orlando and four theme parks, et cetera. But there will be a need for the extended weekend in Gatlinburg or in a beach town or something of that nature, where they're looking for that some family time and on a more modest budget.
Yeah, I totally agree. The staycation, you know, component is going to be big. And also, as we start to be able to come out of it and reopen, you know, as we look at guest motivation and why people come to visit us, they come to be with their families and friends and be outdoors. And right now, it's so tough to be outdoors. We're definitely hearing from our guests that they can't wait to be able to come back and just to be outside and see the animals and be with their families and stuff again. So I think it's going to be slow, and I do think it's going to be focused in that regional aspect.
Should the larger attractions focus on smaller things to bring back? I'm looking right now thinking Halloween events in a theme park or Christmas events in a theme park, their planning stages and their installing stages have all been completely upended. So in your opinion, who's gonna come out of this least scathed, I think is the question?
I think we're going to come out of it probably much more quickly than some of your bigger attractions with a higher price point, but we're going to struggle to just get through it and survive it more than they will.
To that point, we've been able to use this downtime a little bit to keep that planning moving forward for seasonal events. So that's been a nice silver lining to the situation. But to Amber's point, I hope the consumers are a little forgiving, because I think you're going to see a diminishment in what new they can provide in the events this year and how big they can go. So I think you're still going to see these events, but I don't think you're going to see them to the scale we've seen them in the past, not for a while. My hope is that consumers understand the situation and are forgiving and still show up and support their parks and the things they love about those parks. The realistic side of my head says they're going to still say, this was the same as last year, I want more. And my plea to the industry is going to be to push back a little bit and say, hey, stay with us. We're going to get there again. But my fear is the consumers are going to want more. And because of the financial straits that a lot of these parks are going to be put on, it's going to be hard to provide what the consumer's looking for a little while, but we're going to do the best we can.
Yeah, I would completely agree with both Alex and Amber. And I think not just on the industry side, but we have to think about the disposable income that's going to be available for our typical consumer. I think the larger parks, the larger attractions with a higher price point are going to have to look at that in the near term. I think they're going to be able to invest to a certain degree. Many of them have those corporations that can back them to a certain level of investment, whereas some of the smaller attractions, the seasonal operations, may not have that investment, but they're also at a lower price point. So I think if you're able to put out a good quality product, even though it may not be huge scale, I think at a modest price point, you're still going to get your guests to come, whether it's for a Halloween seasonal event or Christmas or something of that nature. I think it'll be, again, 12 to 18 months before we start to see the type of numbers at the larger destination parks.
11 months later, and we're already seeing the return of demand. The haunts that managed to open this season saw unprecedented numbers, and both Disney and Universal in Orlando hit capacity limits over the holidays. Those are all good signs, but the consolidation mentioned did happen. Smaller haunts without capital reserves didn't open, even as the theme parks with capital reserves used the time to expand and add even more offerings to their park. However, there's still opportunity. As Todd mentioned, offer something reasonably priced for your local market. The pandemic has accelerated every trend, and that includes the widening wealth gap for disposable income. While Disney has opened luxury experiences such as the Galactic Star Cruiser and even recently $75 food passes on the one end, there's still opportunity on the other end for budget offerings. For example, Zoo Tampa's Halloween and Christmas events sold out, and that price point was only about $25. Nobody is back at 100%, and that gives haunters one more season of opportunity to create something with unique reach. Next, let's explore untangling local regulations so you can open.
Do you think your or any venues will open at the government-recommended all-clear dates, or will the organizations make internal decisions on reopening? So in other words, I know we're all following what COVID is, or what the CDC is saying, and what all of our government standards are. Where does that weigh? Is it 100% up to the government, or are there internal discussions going on as well, and how do those weigh out?
We're in a space where we have a mayor who has one idea of restrictions and a governor who has another. And so it's which one supersedes the other, and where do we as an attraction fit within the scope of the bans that they're putting into place? We are also a city-owned facility, although we're run by a nonprofit organization. So also trying to understand really who has the governance as to when we open and when we can't do so.
So it sounds like it's a balance. You're weighing what the government is saying and then also looking at the situation from what you know to be true in your own park. I agree with you. I think it's important to look at the recommendations and recognize what each individual organization can do in order to meet those regulations. Todd or Alex, do you have anything to add to that as far as where that balance falls?
I would say for us, it's going to be case by case. Obviously, we're in 30-plus markets around the globe, and each one is going to be different based on what's happening on the ground there, the jurisdictions in those particular locations. But it's certainly being reviewed on a regular basis by our executive team.
Since this panel, only a few things have changed. IALPA has a great reopening guide available for free, and so does Fear Factory. However, some haunts are still making the decision whether to follow the state guidelines or to go more intense. We at the network always recommend making multiple plans and planning for the worst case scenario. So if you didn't open this past season, here's what to do. First, download the reopening guides from both IALPA and Fear Factory. Then catch up on your local regulations. All right, now what if you don't operate your own haunt and you're looking for a new home? Let's hear about that.
Here's the tough one. Here's the tough question. What advice or suggestions do you have for the short term for those people who have recently been furloughed, let go, freelancers who require these kinds of industries to keep their, like me, to try to keep their cash flow going? What are some things that you would recommend for the people who are in those particular situations based on your perspective from the park or the zoo or the attraction?
First thing is stay involved. Don't drop off the grid. I know it might be easy to do that and grab something to drink and sit and just watch the birds fly by, but I think you have to get out there. You're going to have to network. And when I say get out there, virtually get out there. Just like this webinar, there's a number of our industry organizations that are putting together resources and virtual gatherings to connect people, whether it's IAPA or TEA or you name it, they're all out there. And we as an industry do come together when times like this. And I think that the most important thing you can do is stay engaged, learn as much as you can. If it's a new skill, there's a lot of new online courses that are being offered for free. You can get out there, take advantage of this time. It might be tempting just to say, you know what, I'm going to watch Tiger King or whatever for the third time, but it's really about getting out there and connecting with the people who are on the ground. You never know who you're going to meet virtually that can connect you with that particular project that may put you in the right direction. So that's all I can do.
Todd, two things. Number one, that's exactly why we are doing Virtually Prepared. It's to get people's, to keep people connected so that when the time comes that we are needed, we are there and we all know that we're here for each other. And secondly, I was waiting until somebody mentioned Tiger King. That's why you saw me take a drink. It is a drinking game now. And unfortunately, this is just sparkling water, but that was the first Tiger King reference. So here's to you.
And just for anybody that's not in Florida, I want you to know Tiger King is not a true representation of Floridians. It is a
Unfortunately, as a Floridian, I would say it is a true representation of all faction. There are some. Okay, so I'm sorry, Amber. Did you want to add something to that?
Just one quick thing. So, from a perspective of hiring freelance and so forth, I think thinking about your business and the product as dynamically as you can. I might not be able to add a ton of new things for our Zoo Lights programs, but I might be hiring folks to come in and add smaller elements. So maybe it's portions of a program to add and try to spruce up something, but versus like whole shows or those kinds of things. Also, I think for us, with some of our layoffs and furloughs, we did lay off our creative team. And so as we start to hire folks back on, it's whether we're going to need to do that through contract or hiring full-time staff or those kinds of things. I can't predict that right now. But staying in touch and just being able to how to think about that really creative and dynamically for your business, I think is going to be important.
Excellent. Guys, first of all, I want to thank all three of these panelists for their time, for their experience, and for their candor in sharing where they're coming from and how they view the industry. Todd Hoglund from Ripley's Entertainment, Alex Crowe from Zoo Tampa at Lowry Park, Amber Christopher from the Denver Zoo. I just want to sum things up, and I think this was something that was mentioned by everybody, and I'm going to sum it up in a very simple phrase that I've been using a lot right now. During this time, please don't panic, pivot, because there is a way through this, there is a way around it, and if we all work together as an industry, I think we're going to get there.
This advice is still solid. Stay involved and look for smaller projects. There are a ton of virtual trade shows coming up, but also keep an eye on the attractions in your area and look for job notices. We see job notices posting daily, and some attractions are gearing up for auditions already. Remember what Scott says, don't panic, just pivot. Well, that was it for our trip into the past. Next week, we'll be back with some examples of haunters who pivoted and more education to help you with your planning. Thank you again to our panelists, Todd, Alex, Amber, and our moderator, Scott Swenson. This episode was sponsored in part by Gantam Lighting and Controls. I edited the episode and post-production was done by David Swope. Please share this episode with a fellow haunter and know that each time you're sharing this, you're supporting independent creators. Subscribe so you catch our shows every Tuesday and Thursday. And until next time, stay scary.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production.